It's series 3 of the Artist in Residence podcast, and we are chuffed to have you with us. Last series, we spoke to the likes of It's Nice That senior editor, the co-founder of Inner City Swim Club Swim Dem Crew, and the filmmaker behind the remake of Christina Aguilera's iconic Beautiful music video, about what it meant to them to use creativity for good, as well as to share real examples of how people are acting on those good ideas and turning them into action. My name is Isabel Wilkinson, and I started this project as a way to personally answer some big questions I had about creativity, problem solving, art, and who creative opportunities are available to. My goal is to bring people together to share their ideas and work together to drive forward solutions to the big issues affecting people and the planet. When it comes to the hardest questions, consider this your invitation to join the table and create answers, because together we can all be artists in residence. For the first episode of Series 3, I wanted to kick us off with a whopper, and this guest certainly fits that description. Greg Hoffman is the former chief marketing officer for Nike, responsible for leading some of the most famous brand campaigns in history over the 28 years he spent working there. In spring 2022, he released the best-selling book, Emotion by Design, in which he shares his personal life story as a biracial adopted child and how his personal and professional experiences empowered and informed how he led one of the most creative brands on the planet through a framework he calls Emotion by Design. I had the pleasure of interviewing Greg about Emotion by Design in April last year when the book first came out, so it was amazing to dig deeper this time into his process of writing and pitching the book. We got to talk about leading with empathy in creative work, why you should care more about telling stories that stick with your audience rather than creating content that just competes for attention. And Greg talked about his experience as a person of colour in the design and creative industries, the late great George Lois, and a warning on pursuing perfection too early in your own creative process. I am endlessly inspired by Greg's work and particularly his book. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Please do let us know if you did. You come to mind whenever the topic of creativity comes up, because I revisit your book, Emotion by Design, regularly. And I'm sure we'll dig into all of the reasons that is. But with the release of the paperback edition this month in the UK, now felt like a really good time to get your thoughts on using creativity for good. So I'd love to get started by asking what creativity means to you.
I like to say I lead a lifestyle, if you will, of creativity, because I'm definitely a daydreamer. And sometimes my attention span is challenged. Because I'm looking around the world, and I think, you know, a lot of the work I do is focused on helping people and communities realize our human potential. And I think so creativity for me is, how do we apply our imagination, our ability to dream of better futures, to creating solutions that enable people to achieve great things. And I would also say creativity for me, by definition, is conceiving ideas and then applying those ideas. And when you think about dreaming and conceiving ideas, I think that's something we can all play a role in. You don't have to be born with that ability. You don't have to go to an art or design college. We all have an imagination, and we can exercise that. Sometimes we have to be reminded to do that. But ultimately, I think we're at our best when we have a particular problem that we're trying to solve, right, through a creative exercise.
I couldn't agree more. And so much of what you've said resonates with my own definition of creativity. I guess particularly that thought that creativity and art and studying art are the same thing, when in fact, creativity can be seen as an act of problem solving. Right now in 2023, what are the outputs of your problem solving and creative exercise?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I do believe creativity, it is an act, it's a process, right? And your art is what manifests your creativity, and how you express yourself through a story, through a product, through an experience that you've created. And really, a lot of what I've been doing over the last year is exercising my creativity through my teaching. I teach graduate school at the University of Oregon's College of Business as their branding instructor. So what does creativity look like in that capacity? It's about dreaming up and scripting lectures, and how do you pair words and images together to make particular topics sticky to an audience? How do you stir their emotions, right? If you're telling a story, what's the beginning, middle, and reveal, the revelation within that story, right? That's creativity as well. At the same time, I do a lot of keynotes around the US, and with the beauty of virtual technology around the world as well. And it's the same way. I do think that, you know, part of creativity is finding deep truths or insights that you want to reveal to your audience, right? And so that idea of constantly asking questions and peeling back the layers of whatever the subject that you're exploring, right, to get to something that's very meaningful and profound, and then finding the best way to share that insight with your audience. And so I go through that process quite a bit on my way to delivering a keynote or having a conversation with a particular brand or an institution. So those are just a couple of ways. But I think, you know, for me, the process I use is one of that starts with empathy and having a deep understanding of the subject matter, right? And oftentimes that's an individual or a group of people, right? And so my job, first and foremost, in terms of the creative process and how I start that, is getting past the simple observations and assumptions, right? Not just being a spectator, looking more deeply at the life experience of the individual that you're trying to create a benefit for, that satisfies some needs. So I think it all starts, you know, oftentimes I think the best outcomes, whether it's a story, whether it's even telling a joke, whether it's a product design, it's only as powerful as to the time you spent up front in trying to find the deeper insight or truth within that. And then the fun part is, once you find that, is revealing that in new and interesting ways.
Your book, Emotion by Design, is all about this idea of using empathy to tell stories. And you give so many examples throughout of how you did this over different disciplines and the many, many years that you spent working at Nike. Why is empathy so important? And how did you come to understand that it should be the starting point for this kind of creative work?
I think it's very difficult to say, well, let's get creative, and we're all just staring at a white sheet of paper. And that's very difficult. And that's definitely rarefied air for those that can create magic just like that. I think we need a set of parameters or variables that allow us to create within an environment that is going to lead to something quite innovative. And so for me, yeah, it always starts with what's the problem we're trying to solve, or what's the need we're trying to satisfy, at least within the context of design and innovation, right? But I even think with art, whether it's sculpture, it's painting, it's drawing, it still involves, I believe, empathy, right? And trying to define that starting point, right? That truth that you want to reveal through your art. But I think it's hard to get to the revelation if you don't have that moment of insightful reflection. And so for me, it really is about peeling back the layers, right? And not just starting with something there's a big difference between an observation and an insight, right? I come from the world of athletics and sport. And if we're starting a creative process and we look at some of the best athletes in the world, and our starting point is that they run fast or jump higher or run further, that's not enough. It's like, what propels them to do that? Maybe what are the life challenges that led them to that pursuit? What are the rituals and habits that they practice to achieve that? And you start digging in, and the more personally you go, the richer, I believe, the insight is. And from that, your creativity can blossom, right? And the other thing I would say here too is, if we're truly going to use creativity to drive human potential, to reveal the best in all of us and help us to achieve that, I think you have to be focused on using your creativity to create things that are new and better, not just new and different. Because something that's just unique and different and distinctive doesn't necessarily mean it's going to allow you to perform better or enhance your performance, right? So this idea of creating something that's new and better will ultimately then need to start with, well, what's the gap? What's the block that an individual is facing, and how can you push them through that? And the last thing I would say here that I always thought was, and this is a bit counterintuitive, right? Because I'm talking about what you need to do at the beginning of a creative process, certainly within the arena of design, which is centered on empathy and curiosity. At the same time, I think it's quite helpful to spend time visualizing the end in mind. What's that audacious vision of the future that you want to invite people to? And how do you illustrate that? You know, one of the things I talk about in the book is, you know, what's the movie poster of your idea, mm-hmm. right? And if you think of a movie poster, right, whether that's scrolling on your Instagram feed or you actually see one, rare these days, but out in the wild on the street, you have about 1 second, 1 to 2 seconds to land your idea and vision, right, of that. Oftentimes with an image paired with a line of copy. Right. And so how do you capture people's imagination and attention to invite them to go on that journey with you? Right. So visualizing, you know, that end in mind is another exercise and is obviously part of curiosity. And it's not about perfection. Oftentimes it's just roughly bringing that to life. Right. Getting people excited about the creative pursuit. And then once you've sparked their imagination and that stirred those emotions, people are more likely to let their guard down, to be a bit more vulnerable, to not be embarrassed, especially in a brainstorm session, right? Because oftentimes that can happen. The first thing you have to do is break down maybe our fear of looking silly, right? Our fear of failure. And the whole point about a brainstorm session is no idea. There's no such thing as a bad idea. Certainly in the ones that I led over the years, right? So you're looking for volume. And then you can edit down to what you think is most effective at a later date.
There's so much you've said there that I'd like to come back to, but particularly your mention of staring at a blank piece of paper and the need for a set of parameters for all kinds of creative work, whether that be design or art. I think so many people struggle to answer the question, what is the problem we're trying to solve? And you also use the phrase, using creativity to drive human potential. And this is something that you've championed throughout your career, particularly fighting for equality and empowering people through sport. For anyone out there who would like to create change in one of those areas themselves, what would your advice be on getting started?
You raise a good point, because oftentimes there are barriers or a lack of invitation to individuals and communities that don't have access to a brand's or an individual's inspiration and innovation, right? I happen to work at a brand whose mission statement was to serve athletes. And if you had a body, you were an athlete. So that meant all of us. Well, there's a lot of barriers in certain places in the world for access to sport or access to products that enable you to exercise regularly or play sport in safe environments. And so that's what I mean in terms of making sure that you're running an inclusive creative process, that the beginning of the process, number one, that you're trying to assemble a team, whether it's in person or virtual, that is representative of a variety of walks of life, right? Because I think the more diversity you have within your creative process, the more likely it is that you're going to solve problems and create solutions that impact the lives of everyone, right? And so I think that that would be just this first point is we're obviously always stronger working together, right? And so I think part of creativity is being collaborative, especially when we talk about creating solutions that change the world. It's hard to do that on your own. And so my first point is that look to create teams or assemble teams or engage with a network of people that don't necessarily have the same life experience and perspective. So when you bring a team like that together, you increase your ability to see further and deeper because you're all coming from a different walk of life. And so to me, creativity isn't just in a team aspect, isn't just about unique expertise. It's taking unique expertise as well as diverse life experiences and perspectives and bringing those into the room up front, right? Will allow you to start to look at the world a bit differently and figure out ways to reach people who, quite frankly, haven't had that invitation to play a part in some of these, you know, larger pursuits on that. So that's one. But at the end of the day, you really have to be crystal clear. And I know we've said this over and over again of what problem are you trying to solve, mm-hmm. right? And you need to look at that in two ways, right? Because we're human beings. You want to use your creativity to solve a rational need. I want to run faster, just going back to sport again, right? So there's a rational creative pursuit that's going to create a solution that's going to make me better from a functional standpoint. But you also have to satisfy the emotional need. How do you want people to feel? How are you going to infuse and surround your solution with emotion, with story? You know, I always talk about, I'm a big believer in world building, right? Building narratives around, it could be a building that an architect creates. It could be a app that is being created. But in any event, whether it's a physical object, a service, or an environment, you have to think about both the rational and emotional value that you're trying to deliver through your creativity, because at the end of the day, as with the title of my book, Emotion by Design, I believe that to create kind of lasting impact, people have to have an emotional connection to whatever it is that you're creating, right? Versus it's simply it's solving a need, but at the end of the day, it might be there today, but gone tomorrow, right? Because it doesn't occupy a deeper meaning in your audience's mind.
Totally. And it can feel like there's so much content out there that it's really hard to get your work to cut through the noise, especially when so much of it is created without that emotion in mind and isn't designed to tell the relevant story. It feels really difficult to escape that battle for attention and instead focus on, as you say, the world building.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, because I think the word content gets thrown around a lot. And I love the fact that there's so many creative tools, capabilities, and platforms for any of us to create content like never before, right? And so, and that gets back to my idea of you don't necessarily have to have the word creative or art or design in your title, regardless of your skill level, your age, where you live. We can all take part in this exciting digital future. With that said, I prefer the word story versus content. I'd much prefer people were talking about sharing stories versus distributing content. Mm-hmm. Because if you're telling a story needs to have meaning. A story needs to convey emotions and return, and in return, you'll stir the emotions of your audience. And if you're in the world of brand building, like I do, anything you output from your brand is an opportunity to reveal something about yourself, about your brand. But oftentimes what's happening is there's a race to create more, mm-hmm. not necessarily more and better, but just more stuff, right? And ultimately, it doesn't land. It's not sticky. It's not iconic. And at the end of the day, it's not remembered. So it's just a reminder that using our creativity to tell stories means that we are trying to reveal something. We are trying to reveal traits and characteristics of the personality of our brand in new and interesting ways. We are trying to convey the benefits of our innovations, right? So if we just get into a game where it's just simply delivering content at the speed of light, ultimately what ends up happening to lots of brands is they actually lose that place in the hearts, minds, and souls of their customers, and they start to just simply compete on price, because somewhere else there's other brands that are engaging in storytelling. Even if it's a 15-second Instagram reel or TikTok video, it is absolutely still possible to create stories that won't be forgotten.
You've brought us on nicely, of course, to talk about your first book, which published this year, Emotion by Design, with huge success. I mean, amazing to speak to you again later in the year to reflect on that. It's now out in paperback in the UK, and I read that in true designer style, you submitted a visual timeline of your life to your now literary agent as a starting point. And I'd love to know more about what that process was like and how you began this journey of bringing the Emotion by Design framework to the wider world.
Yeah, thank you. Great question on that. And it's easy to have a plan, but obviously you need a level of flexibility on that journey. And I was certainly surrounded with folks that really were able to give me so much insight and coaching on this author journey. But basically, my process is, I really believe in this idea of playing in the intersections. And I think innovation and stories often happen by intersecting different thoughts, stories, innovations, expertise. And so for me, I actually started with three, you could say, buckets of writing, right? And they were really started as lists. You know, the first was my own leadership timeline. Mm-hmm. Like, what were my roles on that? And what was the timeline on that journey from intern to chief marketing officer at Nike? Then the second one was, what are the stories and anecdotes and milestones when it came to campaigns and innovations and experiences within that? And so that was that second list. And then finally, what were the lessons and principles and mantras that I was privy to or part of or authored during that time? And so you have these three kind of lists and dimensions. And then the through line was my own journey as a person of color within a world-leading brand and within the world of marketing, design, and innovation. And then it's basically standing back, and it's like, well, how are you going to bring these into a narrative form, right? Because, listen, we can all go on LinkedIn at any time and get a list of principles, right? How to. You can go on YouTube. So in terms of the book format, how do you create a page-turning narrative by bringing this information all together? Because Here's the thing. What you can find now, or what publishers can find, is that with business books, the drop-off rate, certainly with digital books, is chapter two.
Wow.
Because what happens is people read the intro, they get through chapter one and say, I'm good. So you have to make sure that, what is your ultimate goal? And your goal is to create both a practical guide, but also an entertaining read that can be applicable and inspire those that from all sectors and walks of life, not just marketing and design. And so that's what I set out to do. But I'm a big believer in, creating lists and, creating journals, if you will, and something I did a lot while I was at Nike. And basically, you could say, like, maintaining a visual and written scrapbook, right? And it can be as messy or as organized as you want. But it proves to be very beneficial when you do get to that point and you want to kind of bring together your point of view or philosophy and share that maybe with the world. And you have those resources to go back to. And so, yeah, that was very helpful from a creative standpoint to have these kind of buckets to draw from on that.
Did you find pulling that narrative together easier or harder or different to as if you're approaching a brand campaign for Nike?
That's right. I think I've always preached that everyone should do the exercise of articulating their brand personality, especially if they're in a leadership position. What are the different traits and characteristics you want to be known for? You want to be famous for, right? And make sure that the distance between what you practice and how you show up is very small between how you're perceived, right? So it's that whole idea of articulating and writing down what those characteristics are and then living those. And you'll have a much better, chance and opportunity of showing up in that way and being remembered for it, right? Just as an aside. So, I think my issue has always been just maybe this pursuit of perfection, and perfection is not possible, right? And that's why I always go back to that George Lois quote. George Lois has just passed away this year, and an iconic art director from the advertising industry over the world, and just incredible magazine covers from Esquire that you can look up. Anyways, he had this quote that said, you can be cautious, you can be creative, but you can't be a cautious creative, right? And it's that whole point of letting your guard down and not trying to be perfect, certainly in the beginning of the process, and not being overly cautious about what you're doing. And that took a while for me to get to that point, right? Because you're being very prescriptive about what are the lessons and what's the beginning, middle, and end of each anecdote and that, versus just taking a step back for a minute. And there's a time to pursue perfection down the road during the editing process, because any author will tell you you're going to have a lot of eyes and inputs on that. But I think just in the beginning of the process of anything that we're doing, you have to quiet the voice on the shoulder that's holding you back from taking risks, right? And we all have that voice, by the way. Right. In some ways, it's there to protect us. But I think certainly in the beginning of the creative process, and certainly for me writing the books, I really had to quiet that voice of perfection down and in some ways not be afraid to be a bit disorganized on that, and then bring it back together over the second half of that process.
Well, you did an incredible job across the whole process, because Emotion by Design is a brilliant read. It's a brilliantly told story with huge power. I spent the last 3 years running a book club and read a lot of business books, and so many of them could be understood and put down after reading just the first and last chapters. But Emotion by Design has huge value on every page and seriously books that trend. So thank you for writing it and sharing your experience and creative leadership lessons.
Well, I appreciate that, Isabel. And I think for me, it was important for me to show my entire, how my life journey affected and drove so much of my professional journey in creative pursuit. And that's oftentimes why I say, you know, there are times in your professional life where you have to bring your personal self and life experience into the room, you know, and just being someone who grew up as a biracial kid in an all-white world, if you will, in a suburb in Minnesota, you know, in a school system where oftentimes I was the only one in the room that looked like me. And so over the years, you know, bringing that experience into my work was really important. And it was important for me to share also specifically how that influenced some of these iconic Nike campaigns that we created over the years. And then ultimately, finally, and I won't give it away, but just revealing a little bit about what it's like to be, you know, also an adopted kid, you know, growing up in that way. And then, you know, maybe discovering later in life where some of those passions and inspirations came from. Because, you know, oftentimes you don't know as an adoptee why you are the way you are, right? So there's a lot of personal layers, I guess, within that, alongside what are hopefully helpful lessons and principles that anyone can practice, whether you're a teacher, a parent, a CEO, or a startup founder.
Totally. And this podcast wouldn't exist without the help of those lessons. So as a final question, you talk a lot about innovation. What is an industry that you think needs a big dose of innovation where you would like to see someone creatively tackling and solving problems this year?
Certainly on the West Coast of America, homelessness is at an all-time high, right? When you think of Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, LA, part of that is the mild climates, right? But throughout the events of the last 3 years, right, and the pandemic and everything that came along with that, homelessness has just grown, you know, exponentially from that. And so it's something that's going to take a lot of collaboration, right? Because when you think of homelessness, you also have to understand that mental illness is a part of that. Drug and alcohol addiction is a part of that. There's so many different factors that lead to why people are living on the streets, why there's a lack of housing security for so many people in some of these major cities on that. And I think, you know, because there's not one way to solve it by one industry or one group of people, that it takes innovations and creativity within healthcare, within the government, the public and private business sectors, and of course the sectors of innovation. But when I think of, you know, all the incredible minds and new innovation and new startups, I'd love to see some of that energy applied to figuring out how we can incrementally move forward. It doesn't have to be revolutionary, because I do think this is, you know, this is going to take us, we have to look at the long game here. But I would say just in the US and particularly on the West Coast, housing security and homelessness is one where I think it's prime time to use our imaginations and our expertises and our empathy to create beneficial solutions that have a long lasting effect on the lives of these people and on the welfare as well of and the longevity of these cities.
And as with all of the biggest issues and problems to tackle in society, a true collaboration is needed.
That's right. As I said, it's the intersection of different sectors and minds and innovations that come together to reveal something that can create systemic change and have impact that can scale.
Amazing. Greg, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Isabel. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you to Greg. If you haven't already sought out a copy, I really recommend picking up Emotion by Design. There are so many lessons and stories that will get you all fired up. Catch you next week.